Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's Reality Cast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode, BB Anderson from the Center for Reproductive Rights will explain the latest bad news in the case over the Texas ultrasound law. Gingrich and Romney battle it out over abortion, and Rick Santorum gets the backing of the religious right going into South Carolina. Or does he? By now, the bleep people say meme is completely out of control. I was over it before it happened, but even then, I think a couple actually make points that are meaningful, such as the bleep white girls say to black girls one, or this one, the bleep people say to feminist one that just came out.
I'm not really a feminist, but I could never be a feminist. I love men.
Whoa, don't get all crazy feminist on me.
Are you a lesbian? Oh, you're a feminist? You shave down there? Do you shave your armpits?
She did leave out two of my favorites. But, like, if women sleep with drunk men, do they have to go to jail for rape, too? And, but what about women who get pregnant on purpose so they can get child support? Don't men have a right to abortion, too? Maybe a follow-up is in order. NPR had a really great segment on recently about the attacks that Republican candidates are making on each other regarding abortion. In a way, you'd think that they just lay off the topic because they're all adamantly anti-choice. But in a primary season that many Republicans are hoping will be a retread of the drawn-out primary the Democrats had in 2008, some candidates are trying to outdo each other in the sport of who is more aggressive in laying claim to the uteruses of America. Which means head-to-head negative attacks from the Gingrich camp and the Romney camp.
The ad attacking Gingrich covers a lot of subjects. It's actually sponsored by a super PAC run by former Romney aides, not by the Romney campaign itself. Here's the part dealing with abortion.
As Speaker, Gingrich even supported taxpayer funding of some abortions.
And here's part of the ad the Gingrich campaign is now running against Romney.
Romney appointed a pro-abortion judge, expanded access to abortion pills, put Planned Parenthood on a state medical board, but failed to put a pro-life group on the same board. And Romney signed government-mandated health care with taxpayer-funded abortions.
I particularly like the whining about not having an anti-choice group on a medical board. It's like having someone who opposes graven images sitting on an art museum board. The point of being anti-choice is to oppose women's reproductive health care access. They differ by degree, with extremist religious nuts not only opposing abortion care, STD prevention, and contraception, but also professional medical assistance for women giving birth. Having someone on the board whose entire role is to fight women having full access to care and to push for medical misinformation is just silly. Romney was the governor of Massachusetts, where one can really conduct politics without doing that disingenuous conservative nonsense where you pretend a lie is equal to the truth. What's interesting, though, is that both these ads are incredibly misleading and portray the men involved as more moderate on reproductive rights than they are.
University of Pittsburgh law professor David Garrow says the main charge in the ad attacking Gingrich,
Gingrich even supported taxpayer funding of some abortions,
may technically be true, but it's still inaccurate.
When that advertisement says, quote, some abortions, unquote, it's knowingly avoiding the fact that the measure that Gingrich supported, sponsored by well-known right-to-life anti-abortion congressman Henry Hyde, would have had the effect of removing financial support from 7, 8, 9% of abortion.
In other words, the Hyde Amendment. This professor is exactly right. The legislation Gingrich supported is a bill banning federal funding of abortion. It has an exception carved out for rape or incest and for the health and life of the mother. It's telling of how bad things have gotten that candidates are being portrayed as overly soft on the dirty sluts if they let a God-fearing housewife who has only slept with her husband but is dealing with a pregnancy that's going to kill her have the money that she needs to live. Well, she did touch a penis. And we can't be letting women carve out these but I'll die loopholes for themselves when they did something like that. I'm also going to guess that the Hyde Amendment excludes far more than 98 or 99% of abortions. The number of women who get abortions because they're able to demonstrate that they fit into the narrow exception numbers in the dozens every year, out of hundreds of thousands of abortions that could be covered if the Hyde Amendment wasn't in place. So it's more like 99-point-something%. Romney claimed to be pro-choice during some of the period that the attack ad against him covers, but somehow the ad still manages to get it all wrong.
And so, Romney can't be blamed or take credit for some of the things in the ad, says NARAL's Donna Crane. For example, this charge.
And Romney signed government-mandated health care with taxpayer-funded abortions.
Yes, the Massachusetts health law pays for abortion, but so did the program it replaced. And that's largely because the state Supreme Court said the state's constitution required it, Crane says.
If the charge is, does Massachusetts care for its low-income women, then yes, guilty as charged. Massachusetts has a good policy in that regard, but it's not attributable one way or the other to Mitt Romney.
And this reference?
Expanded access to abortion pills.
That's really a reference to the morning after birth control pill. And while Romney did sign one bill to make those pills more available, he also vetoed one that would have required their availability for rape victims.
This, as you can imagine, is particularly infuriating. It's a clear demonstration of how anti-choicers, when they have no other choice, will just simply lie. There is no definition by which you can call the morning after pill an abortion, even if you're flailing around and trying to get by on a technicality. Unless you think pregnancy begins at ejaculation, it just isn't an abortion. And if you believe that, you're unbearably stupid. It's also worth noting that Massachusetts isn't the only state that mandates abortion coverage as a matter of equal rights. The courts in many states have done that. The reason is that they're right. Barring women from full coverage because they can get pregnant is very basic discrimination. Of course, while I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, huh, it might actually not hurt Romney in the general if people are misled into thinking he's moderate on reproductive rights. And NPR's professor interviewee agrees.
Should he, as expected, become the GOP nominee?
So to the extent that the Gingrich campaign or Gingrich-supportive super PACs are attacking Romney as a dangerous moderate, they may well be serving him in very good stead for the long run.
Which is, of course, exactly the opposite of what Romney's conservative opponents are trying to do.
Actually, I don't think she's right about that. Yes, the challengers to Romney's throne would very much like to beat him in the primary, but it doesn't follow that they wouldn't want him to pick up a little of that moderate vibe in the general if he wins the nomination. Most Republicans still prefer Romney to Obama, and while they aren't in love with him, they'll probably be glad if voters think Romney is more moderate than he actually is on reproductive rights. I'd like to welcome Bebe Anderson to the program. Bebe is the director of U.S. legal programs for the Center for Reproductive Rights. Unfortunately, the center has had a setback in their case against the state of Texas for passing a mandatory ultrasound law, and Bebe is here to tell us about it. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Bebe.
Thanks, Amanda. Glad to be here.
Okay, let's start with the basics. What's the law that was passed in Texas, and what are the problems with it?
Well, this is one of the most extreme laws passed anywhere in the country, and in fact, only two other states have passed laws like this. And what makes this law so extreme is that it doesn't simply require that women be offered information. What it requires is that women of Texas, in order to get an abortion, have to have an ultrasound performed solely for the purpose of the state being able to provide its message to the woman about what they should think about in making their decision. And it requires that this ultrasound be performed and that the physician display the image so the woman can, you know, that it's in the woman's view and make the heart tone audible if there is a heart tone, but try to make the heart tone audible, and whether or not the woman wants to hear that. Put the image in her view, whether or not she wants to hear it, and describe the image, whether or not she wants that description. So it really forces the woman to be subjected to the image and sounds and information without any regard to her circumstances or her desires, and that's what makes it so extreme and so unlike anything that the higher courts have considered in this country.
One of the things I saw a lot of people talking about online is that in order to get all that done, this has to be done in a way that's more invasive than ultrasounds are usually done. Can you talk about that a little bit too?
Well, the type of ultrasound performed is going to depend on, you know, how far along the woman is in her pregnancy. But what this law adds to, and even though ultrasounds were not previously required by law, typically abortion providers in Texas perform an ultrasound right before the procedure to confirm information. This law is requiring an ultrasound at a different time than that, and for this very different purpose, and also requiring something that's never part of standard practice for abortions, which is trying to make the fetal heart tone audible, which so that requires some additional steps that wouldn't otherwise be part of the medical procedure or the medical practice.
A lot of states have mandatory ultrasounds. Why did the center select Texas for such a large lawsuit?
Well, because those other states, other than Oklahoma and North Carolina, which are the only other states that have laws this extreme, other states have laws that require, for example, that a woman be offered the opportunity to view an ultrasound if an ultrasound is being performed, or that she be offered the opportunity for information about the image if she wants that. This law is so extreme because it doesn't require an offer. It requires, as I say, that the image has to be put in her face, that the heart tone has to be made audible, that the description has to be provided, whether she wants that or not. And, you know, that's not done in other medical practice. It's not done that the state gets in between the woman and the physician and says, irrespective of the patient's desires, the physician's going to have to subject her to experiences for this non-medical purpose, this purpose of giving the state's message about what she should consider and what weight she should give to her considerations in deciding whether or not to have an abortion.
The center initially had rapid progress in their lawsuit against Texas regarding this law. Can you describe what happened in the sort of first round of legal action?
In this lawsuit, we went in and sought to block this law so that the requirements would not go into effect. And we succeeded in getting an order from the district court saying that the requirements that a woman be subjected to having the images put in her view, having the heart tone made audible, having the image described, whether or not she wanted it, those requirements were blocked by the district court judge. So those requirements never went into effect. We succeeded in getting an order before the law went into effect to block those.
Unfortunately, you had a major setback recently, one that allowed the law to start being enforced, if I'm not mistaken. Can you describe what happened there?
Yes. Unfortunately, just last week, a three-judge panel of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a higher-level court than the district court, they decided, in their view, that the district court judge had incorrectly ruled on the law and had been incorrect to block those requirements from going into effect. So they came out to a very different view and really issued an incredibly harsh ruling, a really extreme court decision, that, and then took the step of saying that immediately the law's requirement should go into effect that had been blocked.
So we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, and it seems you told me before in the pre-interview that we have some immediate steps that are going forward from here. Can you kind of describe those?
Yes, there's a hearing scheduled for this Friday in front of the district court judge where we're seeking a permanent injunction. As I mentioned, we were able to preliminarily block the ultrasound requirements initially based on their violation of physicians' free speech rights and based on the violations of the woman's rights. And that's now been overturned by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, but now we're seeking the permanent injunction, which we had relief that we're seeking to try to get these requirements permanently blocked. So we'll have a hearing in front of the district court judge on that this Friday afternoon.
And that's a different judge than the ones that didn't allow you to have the injunction in the first place, right?
This is the judge that originally gave us the injunction. This is the district court judge. This is definitely a different judge than the ones that just last week issued a ruling that really, again, an extreme ruling that allowed these requirements to go into effect and allowed the government to intrude in this way in between the woman and her physician.
So what can listeners of RH Reality Check, listeners and readers do to support you in this lawsuit?
Well, certainly we welcome them keeping informed of the progress of the lawsuit and understanding that no matter what happens, even with a setback like this, we're not giving up on our fight to protect the women of Texas. We're committed to the women of Texas. We're committed to the goal of having them be able to have full access to their reproductive health care, to not have the government coming in between them and their physicians, to not have the government be insulting women by assuming that they are not weighing their reproductive choices carefully and responsibly. We know that Texas women are fully capable of weighing their reproductive choices carefully and responsibly, and we know that the government is wrong to pass laws like this that are really insulting and patronizing. So that is a commitment that we have going forward. It's been a commitment throughout this case, and it will continue to be a commitment of ours, and to do what we can to keep the women of Texas being able to exercise their reproductive choice.
My guest today has been Bebe Anderson from the Center for Reproductive Rights. If you want to help the center in their fight against this law, please visit trusttexaswomen.com to find out what you can do. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast.
Thank you, Amanda. And thanks to your listeners.
The growing antagonism against Mitt Romney on the religious right is no joke, despite the fact that he's run hard to the right on their two biggest issues, gay rights and reproductive rights. Part of that is they just don't trust him, because he really did pander to the left in the 90s when he needed to do so in order to get elected in Massachusetts. The problem for the religious right is that there were so many candidates competing for the not Mitt Romney vote that it was really hard for them to get behind a single candidate as a group and exert some power. Michelle Bachmann was the most overt culture warrior, but, you know, female. Rick Perry had that prayer rally, but he was also on the record disagreeing that women who have sex should pay for it by losing their lives to cancer. Ron Paul is solidly on their side, I believe, but he's so used to demanding that he be allowed to have it both ways that it's not surprising they're confused about how serious he is about banning abortion. Plus, he was a doctor. And as the anti-choice movement starts to get more radical, they're starting to see doctors as softies who support stuff like contraception rights, which Paul does. And Santorum has the stench of a loser on him. So, with all this vote splitting in New Hampshire and Iowa, the religious right realized that they had to, and pardon me for undoubtedly screwing up a sports metaphor, throw a Hail Mary.
We find out soon if evangelical leaders can still deliver votes in South Carolina. After struggling for months to unite behind a candidate, they met over the weekend and endorsed former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum.
Let's recall Santorum nearly won Iowa, fell far behind in New Hampshire, and is now making his case to conservative voters in South Carolina. Evangelicals hope Santorum will emerge as a strong alternative to Mitt Romney. Some conservatives do not trust Romney, though he is moving rapidly toward the GOP nomination.
To my mind, this is actually the best choice if ideological purity is their main thing. While all the candidates left are hostile to reproductive rights and mostly hostile to gay rights, Santorum has a certain something when it comes to his approach. He's more extreme, with his comments supporting restrictions on contraception access. He's more unapologetic. He's weirder. And that's something that actually plays well with the Christian right, since they like to imagine themselves as outsiders. Santorum was thrilled, as you can imagine, to get this endorsement going into South Carolina.
Yesterday afternoon at a restaurant in Florence, Santorum gave it the hard sell. He argued that this election is not all about the economy and the government's fiscal health, as it is often portrayed.
If all you think we need to do to get this economy going and to get this country on the right track is to cut government and reduce taxes, you don't understand America. America is a moral enterprise, not an economic enterprise.
Those words were aimed directly at Mitt Romney, who's running as a businessman with firsthand knowledge of how the economy works.
Since Rick Santorum means against sex when he claims that America is a moral enterprise, I have to point out that by every conceivable measure, he's just wrong. Santorum believes sex before marriage is wrong, and 95% of Americans have sex before marriage. Santorum believes contraception is wrong, but 99% of women have used it at some point. Santorum's own family doesn't live up to his ideals. A recent story in the Daily Beast chronicled how Santorum's wife, Karen, spent much of her 20s living in sin with her much older boyfriend. Believe it or not, her boyfriend was, wait for it, an abortion provider. Yeah. We already know that the Santorums are do-as-we-say, not-as-we-do people, but it's just really comical hearing Santorum go on about his sexual morality when it's so far out of step with America that even his American family couldn't stick to their own rules. But the endorsement should be a good thing for Santorum. Or will it be? Unfortunately, while the point of the whole Texas meeting of Christian conservatives was to get everyone behind a single candidate, that's not what really happened at all, as Rachel Maddow reports.
Listen to this from today's Washington Times. A civil war is breaking out among evangelical leaders over allegations of a rigged election and ballot stuffing at a Saturday gathering of religious and social conservatives. In back and forth emails, Protestant fundamentalist leaders who attended, most of them backing former House Speaker Newt Gingrich to be the anti-Romney candidate, are accusing Catholic participants of conniving to rig the vote. They say they were conned into leaving after the second ballot on Saturday. They said pro-Santorum participants then held a third ballot, which Mr. Santorum won. My view is that the vote was manipulated, said a prominent social conservative who asked not to be named. Now, a prominent evangelical political organizer is saying to others confidentially that he has evidence that in at least one instance, a participant was seen writing Mr. Santorum's name on four separate ballots and putting them in the ballot box. Evangelicals who left after the second ballot are now calling on Bob Fisher, a leader of the proceedings, to hold a recount.
In sum, there's a war between the Protestant and Catholic factions over who to back, Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich. Yes, both candidates are Catholic themselves, but I can see why this is occurring. Gingrich really suits the Protestant religious right more, with his enthusiasm for making students in poor schools clean toilets if they want the right to attend school. Santorum occasionally ventures into using rhetoric that suggests that he would like less poverty, which is the sort of thing that plays better with the fundy Catholics than the fundy Protestants. So, in their efforts to topple the Mormon, the Protestants and Catholics may be too distracted fighting each other. I would just wish that they could keep it up, so they'd have less time and energy to be fighting their common enemy, women who want to have full reproductive rights. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts. Yeah, no, that's just not possible edition. Right Wing Watch taped Amber Haskew on Liberty Counsel's Faith and Freedom program talking about the supposed financial benefits of not having sex before marriage. Warning, like a lot of abstinence-only fanatics, she speaks in that breathy voice that's supposed to be all sexy and submissive, but it's just annoying.
There's so many statistics. When I started researching and learning for this project, it was just incredible the importance and the gravity this decision really affects your whole life. One of the statistics that I was researching talks about how individuals who wait for marriage will make an average over their lifetime of approximately $370,000.
If you go to the link at Right Wing Watch, you'll see that that stat came from the Heritage Foundation, and they quite literally made it up out of nothing. They claim to be able to assume all these things about abstainers and then extrapolate, and yeah, it's the worst statistics crunching I've ever seen. Ever. In real life, people who abstain until marriage are such a small portion of the population that you can't actually generate meaningful statistics about them compared to other populations, since there's no way to control for extraneous factors. I mean, at this point, it seems pretty much all of them are professional virgins, so already you can't compare them to the public at large.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.